Coming up on All About Android, we discuss Android Q's custom launcher problem. Google's latest social network is called Shoelace, and that's just kind of funny that they have another social network. The long-awaited JBL Link Bar has arrived. The Air TV Android TV dongle. There's an updated Snapdragon 855 Plus. Your email and more on this episode of All About Android.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by LegalZoom. Check out LegalZoom today to see how they can make life better for you and your business. Visit LegalZoom.com and enter AAA at checkout for special savings. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 429, recorded on Tuesday, July 16th, 2019, your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards, back in the home studio.
No kidding, I'm not used to seeing it. In a place where you can use your voice to turn on and off the Christmas lights when they are hanging.
Okay, turn on the living room light.
Hey, oh boy, that's blooming hot.
It is. Let me turn that off. And I apologize to everyone whose living room light I just turned on,
that's
listening
okay.
at home or watching live. I apologize.
We'll mute it on the podcast. Joining us, a man who is very familiar with the hazards of saying the OKG hot word on a podcast. It's Patrick Norton. How are you doing, Patrick?
I'm afraid to speak lest I trigger anything at this point.
That's all right. You are with friendly people who completely understand. You are welcome. You do so many shows. Host of Tech Thing, AVXL, Twitch, of course, here on the network this week in computer hardware. Also writing for Tested, Digital Trends. You're a busy guy.
You know, it's a funny thing. If you stay busy, your children are less likely to not have health insurance or be hungry.
That's very good advice that I take to heart, Patrick.
That's what they say.
Now that I've joined the child, I had two.
How do I know what you're doing at Marvel and your current pinball status, but I don't know the fact that you have two kids.
Yeah.
I really hope your wife can't hear this conversation.
luckily she's elsewhere with the children, but yes, no, six months ago, we doubled the number of people living in this house. So it's pretty good. We'll talk later. We'll talk later about it.
Practically raises itself.
I hope so.
Yeah. Again, that's what they say.
Considering that they're born a minute apart, I hope that she catches up real fast.
Patrick, it's great to get you on. Really, really happy to have you here tonight. And you jumped through fiery hoops to make this camera setup work because you had it set up in the other room. So I appreciate your effort.
From the kitchen where my family will need to eat to hear and preserve harmony.
Right on.
House.
Well, it's good. We can all understand and respect having harmony in the household. So it's great to have you on. We've got some news to talk about. Starting with Victor and the news bumper.
The thing that causes harmony in my house is when I activate Android News.
Oh, Android News is activated. What is the hot word for activating Android News? I don't know.
It's the old-timey voice.
Oh, it's not a hot word. It's just like a twang.
Just
the
tone.
A tone.
It's more of an accent.
Okay, yeah. That's the future. Android Q Beta 5, we talked last week that it was that there was like a leaked version of it that XDA had their hands on. It's now officially launched. I think it happened a day later, which is usually how it goes. A couple of things of note. There's an assistant swipe now. Actually, I can show it. Let me see here. Let me show off my phone here. So more tweaks around the gestures. So you still got the long pill down there. But if you swipe in from the corners, you'll see this little – well, if you swipe in from the corner, you get the assistant pop-up. And you can kind of see little handles that appear there every once in a while. Of course, it's not doing it right there to kind of give you that hint. So if you aren't, you know, waking assistant with your voice or squeezing for assistant or, you know, the 5 million other ways how you get to assistant on your phone, now you can swipe from the corner and bring up assistance. So that's great. But the downside of these changes is actually something that I'm really curious to kind of see how this how this plays out. Google announced that Q's gesture navigation will not work with third-party home screens, at least at launch. A friend of the show, Chris Lacey, wrote about this. Of course, he creates the Action Launcher, home screen launcher. And, you know, I imagine other launcher creators are kind of bummed about this, right? Like, if you have a third-party launcher that you're going to install on an Android Q device, at least at launch, once it's out, you're not going to be able to use the gestures. It's going to default to the three-button layout that Google seems to be saying is the past, not the future.
I think it's safe to say begun these launcher wars have I screwed it up.
That's okay.
It was
begun
a noble
these
attempt.
Launcher wars have. Yeah, this is a shot across the bow. This is Google. I mean, we talked about how, you know, Google takes some of the best functionality that other third-party developers put in things like launchers and other apps and adds it into the OS. And now here's something that a lot of users like to use that's saying, no, you need ours. Like, you need to only use ours. And that's a scary precedent, I think.
Yeah. But, you know, this isn't like the end of the road as far as this is concerned. Google is committed to making this work. Chris Lacey even points out in his write-up that the Android team intends to make gesture navigation compatible with third-party launchers later this year. So it'll happen eventually. Kind of seems from the tone of Chris's write-up that he's not completely alarmed, but, you know, he was alarmed when he first heard about this. So the sky is not necessarily falling. Patrick, have you, now that Google is doing this kind of like public beta thing on Android, do you run the risk of installing it and playing with it and living with it? Or do you just wait for everything to iron itself out? Because it is kind of a roller coaster, to be honest.
Well, the first thing I want to say is the idea of sucking up third-party things into the main operating system is so Apple. I can remember like System 7 dot whatever and moving over and really cool shareware apps, some which were working to support charities. Apple just being like, that is a great idea, and you've been nurturing that app for several years now, and now it's part of the operating system.
Thank
yeah.
you.
So it's not like it's a new thing. It certainly happened on lots and lots of different areas app wise. I was laughing because I was so excited, part of Julie, about being on the show, because this morning I found out there's a system update available, so I can finally get Pi on my Motorola G6.
Oh, so welcome to last year.
At this point, I'll be really excited if Pi runs stable, and then maybe I'll be thinking about running some, you know, betas, developer editions, because, you know, there are so many minor gripes I have with this phone in terms of the operating system. I'm not feeling super adventurous about getting a layer of abstraction. You know, if I was running a Pixel or a Samsung, I'd probably be a little more experimenty, a little more prone to experiment with the operating systems.
Yeah, fair enough. It is a little alarming to me that Google is still so tweaking the gesture navigation this far into the beta schedule. Like, there's basically one more release and then it's the final release. Yet every single time it seems like they're making these big changes to the gesture navigation, which is supposedly like what they're committed to doing, yet we're this late and things are still changing. But maybe that's just how it goes. We normally don't have access to it, you know?
No, I'm not surprised though, Jason, because I feel like ever since Q first dev release came out, I feel like the one through line in talking about this beta has been the gesture control. Right? Like, wasn't there early things where it doesn't have the gesture? They're changing the gesture. It's going to move the pill. It's not going to... Like, I feel like there's just been a lot of chatter about the gesture control.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much of that chatter and that feedback they're measuring and then applying, or are they just trying to work the kinks out of what their plan is and moving forward?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, so much of it has been around the gestures. But I mean, I feel like time and time again, it never feels perfect. And I guess that's the point, right? Like, if it's not perfect, you tweak it until you get there. But this is Google we're talking about. Maybe they never get there.
Yeah, I mean, Google's a company that took perfectly functional and recognizable features inside of Gmail, arguably their most popular. I mean, okay, Android or Gmail. It's hard to tell which one. Probably, I guess, Android hits more people. But, you know, they would do things like, oh, let's redesign the primary icons that define your interaction with our servers, and let's change the icons, because let's fix something, make it difficult to find, and see whether the user base can eventually get back up to speed. Like, I hate to sound harsh, but Google's always been, I'm down with experimentation with UI, but I always feel like, you know, they vacillate between having a really clear vision, which often is something that none of the rest of the consumer base actually understands, and just sort of experimenting until something kind of evolves, or somebody just says, stop it, ship it, we're done. And it's hard to tell which one in some cases. Is that harsh?
It's harsh, but it's true.
It's true. Okay. And I think that often you get that singular vision, but with an expiration date. Right? We're like, it's going to be like this for 2 years, and then we're going to mix it up and change it again because it's expired. You know, like we need to do something to shake it up.
Google really enjoys pulling the rug out from under something that, you know, is perfectly organized. It makes a lot of sense.
Your life, how you interact with devices that define your relationship to technology. That was great. We're going to do it all over again.
Because we know that you enjoy learning how to use our software. So we've given you another opportunity to relearn how you use Gmail. Isn't that fantastic?
I'm pretty sure there's somebody out there who understands game theory and gamification much better than we do and realizes that it keeps us engaged by trying to figure out the changes. And we want to.
It pisses us off. It has us thinking about going back to iOS.
There's a lot of people that fall into that boat. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely.
True.
More and more, you know, as this stuff happens, you see more and more chatter about that. A few other bits. Google Translate button is now going to be able to appear in the recents view. So, you know, the recents where you get all of your previous apps, kind of the multitasking view. If it happens to be in another language, you'll get a little translate button that you can tap so you can translate it there. So it might be useful. And then XDA discovered a Tasker-like APK in the beta 5 called Rules. I don't know if it's necessarily meant to replace Tasker functionality, but it seems to do a lot of that stuff. XDA actually speculates that this might be a Pixel 4 feature for device automation, because Google has not really even mentioned this functionality at all yet they discovered it in there. So who knows if that'll be like one of those features, because Google likes to save some features for the actual official release. I've noticed in the past when they've done these betas, they want to have a little bit of a surprise for when it finally launches. Maybe this is it. Maybe it's something else. Who the heck knows? Maybe it's nothing. Maybe the surprise is that people at Google have been listening to your audio recorded on your Google Home.
I'm honestly surprised it took this long for this to come out. But so rock the headlines when a Dutch newspaper ran a report that someone leaked a cache of Google Home voice recordings. And basically Google said they confirmed this, and they said a reviewer violated its data security policies by leaking the audio. That's an audio reviewer, not like a press reviewer or something like that, right? One of their employees. Right. Google said that employees review some of the snippets to improve voice recognition, and that 0.2% of all audio is reviewed and is not associated with account data or personally identifiable data. Amazon has shown to do this as well for improving Echo devices. And I guess the big question is like, Patrick, does this surprise you that they listen to this to make sure that the voice recognition works well or not? Or like, how do you feel?
No.
Like, right.
I have complicated feels about this one, because I was in a conversation recently where somebody who works at sort of the fringes as a company where their big play is AI is kind of like, well, you know, we take advantage of human intelligence and basically what it came down to is, you know, we use Amazon's Mechanical Turk or something similar, so that a lot of poorly paid people will help teach our AI. Like, you know what I mean? That initial stage of AI where you need people to teach it enough examples where it can start learning for itself. And at some point, I think some of those things actually end up working. And at some point, I think none of them end up actually working, depending on the quality of the AI and who's implementing it and, you know, how they're changing it. And I bring all that up because, you know, not too long ago, somebody was like, oh, I'm in the EU. I can access all of the history of, I want to say, my Amazon, you know, data that they've stored, and got a giant dump truck. I make humor here, a giant collection of audio clips that had belonged to somebody entirely else's account. And you know, on one hand, you know, 0.2% of the staggering number of humans that use this service is infinitesimal, right? And, you know, the number of peoples whose audio was leaked is probably the tiniest of fractions of that 0.2% of the user base. But if it's your audio, it's sure as hell going to matter for you. And then it becomes, you know, you'll hear people yelling and the EU will start yelling and the Congress critters in the United States will start calling up the people who gave them the donation in the last election cycle and say, we need a little more this year to help preserve, you know, your corporate position. Not that I'm feeling a little snarky about, you know, how Congress people. Well, yeah, well, it's not so much the government is, but it's just there's this really odd thing I'm watching where people are like super, super concerned about privacy. And then they're like, oh, I'll just give you all of my information in exchange for, you know, some stupid widget on your game that I paid for. And it won't get rid of the ads that I thought I paid to get rid of. But, you know, I wanted that particular whatever it is. And, you know, mostly it's like, you know, how were they able to record this? What was the quality of the recordings? You know, were they holding up the microphone of their phone next to the speaker? People are going to people and people don't particularly care, or people think that it doesn't matter, or and that's frustrating, right? Because, you know, if somebody catches, you know, a snippet of a conversation I don't want to share, that's, you know, embarrassing or depressing, or there could be legal action or anything else. I just feel like it's really, you know, like, one, I got to make sure the Google device, the Google Home device I've been testing next to my bed is unplugged, because if my wife sees this article and sees that there again, you know,
no, but
spousal harmony will not be maintained. But like
you aren't Dutch, so you have nothing to worry about. It's okay.
Oh, yes, because it only happens.
It
happens to other people. That's fine. Yeah, no. Yes. I mean, yeah. No, but going back to this whole thing, like, I wasn't surprised to read this. I was just surprised that it got out, because of course they need to test it in some way, and they're going to use real-life data and all this sort of stuff. And, Patrick, you made the perfect point, is that, like, there's a tacit understanding that's going to happen unless it's my data, you know, there's no way for us to even know that. Yeah.
You know, yeah.
I don't care. If you want to listen to me and my wife argue over what we're gonna do when the baby's crying, go for it, Google.
Say that now. I know people who have like security cameras all over their house, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, it all goes to a third party, you know, and not third party name of, you know, company that made their cameras, you know. And I'm like, don't you feel a little uptight about that? You know, all the video that's running of your house is scannable sometimes. And statistically, like, you know, it's incredibly unlikely that somebody's going to see, you know, the video of you and your wife getting crazy in the hallway, or you spanking your child, or your dog, you know, pooping on your portrait of, you know, your grandmother, or whatever horrible thing is going to show up on YouTube next week. But, you know, people don't realize that there's not a lot of security. There's not a lot of privacy in a lot of these services. In a lot of cases, it's not particularly well implemented from a secure standpoint, or a sort of like, you know, if a pen tester comes and looks and pokes it with a sharp stick, it's probably going to deflate. Like, it's kind of alarming how poor. I think Google's doing a good job. I think Amazon's doing a good job. I think everybody else is probably a little bit suspect. But yeah. You know, I work close enough with enough people that work full time in security that I'm probably a little amped up and perhaps tinfoil hat-ish by nature.
Not a wrong place to be necessarily. You know what I mean? There may have been a time where thinking about that seemed like, well, what's going on? You know, with your line of thinking, like, that's irrational, whatever. Time and time again, we see examples of why that's maybe not so irrational and why it is a good idea to at least consider it. I think a lot of people just don't even consider it. And then, you know, they become the 0.2%. Unlikely. But it can happen. And if it happens to you, like you pointed out, it's a pretty big deal. So, and then Qualcomm is updating Snapdragon 855, which is the processor you're going to find in all of the, you know, the last year's kind of most premium Android devices are probably running the 855, if they're on the Qualcomm chip. They're upgrading it to the 855 Plus. Still very similar, obviously. This is like an incremental upgrade at the halfway point, but it's getting an upgrade from 2.85 gigahertz to 2.96 gigahertz, so a little bit faster. Also 15% faster graphic rendering with the Adreno, the Adreno 640 GPU update. So modest update. Apparently, it's going to appear in the Asus Rogue. What does the Rogue stand for again? I always forget. Flo, I think, is the one that always knows this.
It was something it is in gaming.
It's
right?
A gaming phone. Yeah, the Asus Rogue Phone 2 launches on July 23rd, and then probably the Note 10 that launches next month. I don't know, Patrick, I feel like this is maybe more your forte. This is like what you guys talk about on This Week in Computer Hardware, but what do you think about this?
At this point, I think most, I hate to be underwhelmed, but at this point, I think there's so many ARM processors coming in so many different directions, and so few of us actually need even most of the performance of the mid-level. I just want, I want 6 gigs of RAM in my phone so that I no longer have to think when I'm switching between apps.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's kind of like my big goal at this point. It was interesting because I was looking at some I cannot talk about any of that, but I was looking at some consumer tablets that will be coming out later this year. And it was frustrating because they were trying to hit a price point and, they put like 1 gigabyte of memory in it, which is typical for the target market they're going for. But it's like, it's going to definitely load something. And then when you go to shift to another app, it'll basically have to clean everything out of memory and load everything out of storage. And yeah, literally. And I get why they did it. They're going for a price point. They want to have profit. It's so frustrating as the kind of delta at this point between the expensive, like if the amount of RAM in the expensive phones and the amount of RAM in the cheap phones gets larger and larger. I feel that for a lot of applications, they may be getting a little looser and looser with the amount of memory they use. That may be a complete fantasy of me projecting on why I need to justify buying a more expensive phone with more RAM. But for me, I just want to see more phones with more RAM, not like 12 or 16 gigabytes, but more, more relatively inexpensive phones with like 6 gigabytes of RAM, just to make switching between applications seamless and fast. To me at this point, unless you're doing some crazy video editing or some really crazed gaming on your Android phone or your iOS device for that matter, most of them have way more processing power than people use with the apps they run.
It's just a deficiency in the amount of memory on there that really kind of rears its ugly head. Well, we're starting to see these phones that are coming out with like 12 gigs of RAM of memory. Right. And, part of me wants to be like, what the heck would you... I mean, of course I'll take a phone with 12 gigs of memory. I will always take a device with more memory, but why is that necessary? And
so
apparently it's very necessary.
It's not necessary in most cases. Okay. Like once you get somewhere around 8 gigabytes, there's like almost no return at this point with the applications people run. What there is, however, is an ongoing battle in mainland China. Remember the megahertz wars where people would put like the megahertz on the side of the PC box?
Yes.
And even long after, there was very little correlation between the speed of the processor and the amount of work it would get done, where a slower processor, i.e. one with a lower megahertz number, might be considerably faster than one with a higher megahertz number. There is this battle in mainland China because somebody I know who works on the PC side of things a couple of years ago was like, hey, if you need memory, don't wait because it's not going to get cheaper again for a while. And this is about 2 years ago as memory prices are starting to go up. And he's like, basically, there's huge battles in the Chinese cell phone market, which turns over cell phones faster than our market. And one of the big things that drives people is they're putting 8, they're putting 12, they're putting 11,000 to 4,000 gigabytes of RAM in phones. And that actually, until more resources came online to make more memory, that was actually a large part of the reason why system memory for PCs and laptops just kept climbing through the ceiling compared to where it was. And then Samsung brought on, I think they finally got the fab. Like they literally were bringing a fab online that was going to be equivalent to 25% of the existing memory production capacity in the world. Wow. So, wow. Yeah, I think they were tired of RAM prices, which makes no sense given that they sell RAM, but apparently made a lot of sense to them. But it was a huge marketing battle. In mainland China that was driving the ridiculous RAM numbers on phones.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure we're going to see some ridiculous RAM numbers on the Note 10 as that comes out next month. I think there's going to be a lot of RAM jammed into that one.
Real quickly before we move on, ROG is Republic of Gaming.
There we go. Yeah, it was right on the tip of my tongue.
Thanks everyone in the chat room who found it at the same time as I Googled it, but there you go. The Asus ROG Republic of Gaming.
All right. Thank you. All right. Ron, you got the email.
Yeah, let's do an email. All right. This email comes in from Ken, who says, I kept expecting Ron to say that he has seen the phones used in the sci-fi series Earth Final Conflict. They were a roll-up phone that ran on a system that if you needed to really crunch through a program, you could buy processing time and power to help things along. I know when the show originally ran, this is where I thought things were going. Check it out. I know it's available to stream for a few different places a few months ago. On Roku was one of them. And this is an image of the phones from Earth Final Conflict. I'll be honest. And Patrick knows this as well, and so does Jason. I'm a big fan of science fiction. I have not watched Earth Final Conflict, but I sure like the look of these phones, at least at the time it came out. Patrick, last week we were looking at the rumored prototype of a rollable display that would be a little cylinder, and the phone screen, the display would roll out from it. We're talking about, you know, did you watch The Expanse on Sci-Fi?
I was like, Amazon. Didn't we just see that on a science fiction show recently where everybody was like watching their phones?
They've got the single pane of glass that projects light in some way and goes beyond the piece of glass or whatever. But the rollable phone is, apparently was speculated here on Earth Final Conflict. So that's worth checking out. I love the future of phones. Patrick, what do you think of rollable of the foldable phones and rollable and all this sort of stuff? Do you think it's ever going to take off?
The foldable phones I've seen have underwhelmed me because of the issues with the hinge, and that leaves, you know, there's this sort of derp in the center. Yeah, the dimple in the center of the screen. I find that frustrating, and for the prices they're charging, I find it completely unacceptable.
Yes.
You guys have seen me in real life, so you know that for me to make an issue, you've seen my truck, for me to make an issue with something aesthetic means it must be really irritating. The rollable phones kind of fascinate me because the idea of I have something that looks like a pen in my pocket and I pull it out and I watch a screen. That idea, I love that. I literally spent 30, 40 minutes at CES this year just watching LG's, rolling TV because it was just so fascinating to watch it roll out and roll in. So obviously I'm easily entertained, but I want to see the aesthetics, and I want to see something that actually – my problem is I want something that's going to be sort of rigid when it opens up and isn't going to be all sort of a rolled-up scroll thing. You know, what's acceptable at the margins of a 100-inch projection screen when you're watching a movie is going to be really, really irritating on something that's 8 or 10 inches in front of you. I also think it's going to be an incredibly long time before we have anything remotely durable enough to be sort of.
I don't want to think about that. That means thinking realistically, I'm with you that I want it to roll out and snap and then be rigid. And what I want to see is I want to see actually what the interaction looks like. Like what is the, what is the haptic feedback? If anything, what is the, kind of the responsiveness to your finger and as you're using it, because up to now we've just seen the concept of the screen fault, rolling in and out. I haven't seen it in use. So I don't know. Different phones.
What we all really want is the jack in the back of your neck, like a William Gibson novel. So you slot the latest phone module into there, and everything's all visual and printed on the back of your cortex as if it was actually, in front of you. And when you get a virus, your entire system's going to shut down and you'll stop breathing. But
everyone wants that.
You want to get sci-fi, man. It's all about eliminating the phone, eliminating the rolling screen, and having it show up inside of your skull because you are directly connected to the internet via,
Yes.
Well, I can
living spot. The internet at that point.
I can recommend everyone to read the new Neal Stephenson novel, Fall or Dodge in Hell, where very subtly he embeds in the concept of a AR kind of visor that everyone uses in the future that not only can you see data and information, but also blocks your identity from anyone looking at you, which is an interesting angle, which we haven't read in science fiction yet. So check out the new Neal Stephenson novel. I'm about 600 pages in. It's fascinating.
Right on. Awesome. All right, let's take a break. thank the sponsor, and then we'll get into some other hardware.
Oh, nice, Patrick. Nice. Patrick has the book right there.
Oh, that was it. That was it. He's reading it right now.
I read it like 3 days after it came out.
Oh, so good.
All right. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by LegalZoom. You want to read something interesting, read your will when you get it done with LegalZoom. That's interesting. I did that years ago before I even worked at Twit. It was a super easy process getting it done through LegalZoom, and it just feels good to have it done, even though it wasn't. It's kind of a challenge to like approach your own mortality and think through some of those things, but really really good process through LegalZoom doing that. But that's not all that LegalZoom is all about. Becoming a successful business owner doesn't just happen. It takes hard work. It takes resources, maybe a little bit of luck as well along the way. And for business owners, one of the best resources to help you run your business is LegalZoom. So yes, they're great at, you know, helping you construct your will, but they're also great at a number of other things directly related with your business. LegalZoom was created 18 years ago to help you confidently get past the hurdles that come with owning a business. Since then, over 2 million people have trusted LegalZoom to help start or run their businesses. Whether you have questions about incorporating or forming an LLC, maybe you need tax advice, contracts to be reviewed, information on trademarks, they have a network of independent attorneys and professionals that can provide you the guidance that you need. And the best part is you're not going to be charged by the hour like you would if you went with a law firm. LegalZoom is not a law firm. They just put you in touch with the trusted people that know what they're talking about. Let LegalZoom help you with your small business worries so you can focus on what you do best. Visit LegalZoom.com now and get special savings when you enter AAA at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com. Make sure and enter AAA for special savings. One more time, that's LegalZoom.com. Enter AAA at checkout. And LegalZoom is awesome. Check it out for yourself. It's where life meets legal. And we kind of talked a little bit about hardware with email before, but let's talk about it some more in hardware. We've got other things to talk about.
I got to say, I love when a topic comes up on the show and
weird?
Then immediately we get an answer a week later.
It is so weird. So last week we were talking, reminiscing, as it were, about the fabled JBL link bar that was shown at Google I.O. not this year, but the year before, and touted with much praise. It was like, oh, everybody wanted to get the first soundbar that had Android TV embedded into it. And then we waited. And then it was delayed. And then we waited some more, and it was delayed, blah, 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 blah. Well, so we mentioned it last week on the show. What do you know? Like a few days later, the JBL link bar is finally available for purchase. I'm convinced that JBL watches the show, and we were their motivation.
I mean, that's the only answer. That's the only reasonable conclusion to make.
The only logical.
So someone at JBL watches the show and was like, "We haven't released that yet."
Yeah, they're like, it was a spit take. They were drinking
water.
There's
a guy in a warehouse with just like boxes of sound bars, and it's just like, "Oh, did you want to sell that?"
Oh, I forgot to hit the button. It's sold. Yeah, it's being sold now. So if you want one, you can go to JBL or a number of other fine places for buying technology and get the $399.95 JBL link bar so that you can say you have the first soundbar that has Android TV and Google Assistant built into it. So even when it's off, it's still a Farfield microphone embedded into it, and it acts as an assistant point. So it's like a Google Home. So
this is great. It's great that we have Patrick on because I want to say maybe, what year is it? 2019. So I want to say maybe 11 or 12 years ago, Patrick, you told me once never to buy a TV with any stuff, any software on it. Just buy a dumb monitor and plug things into it.
Well, I'm still of that opinion, but now you cannot buy any dumb. There are fundamentally no dumb monitors. So I got you a really funny argument with Robert Heron from AVXL, I don't know, about a year and a half ago. And I was like, just stop even mentioning the software that's on the television. Because what we always end up doing is telling people, like, buy an Apple TV, buy a Roku, buy an Android TV device, just plug it into an HDMI port and ignore everything that came from the factory on the the television, because invariably, no matter what they do, if it's not a Roku TV, the Roku TVs are actually really, really good. Almost everything else gets limited sort of support and just sort of becomes useless after a year or two, even on the incredibly expensive televisions. Mm-hmm. So same advice, different way of channeling it.
Okay, so glad that it's the same advice, and I agree with you. Between the horrible UI and then the lack of updates and like things right. like that, but do you feel that a Android TV, Google Assistant, soundbar combo is an acceptable thing to plug into a monitor? Like, is this something that you actually would consider?
I would be curious to see how they implement certain aspects and what happens. You know, let me test it and I'll get back to you.
Fair.
Because it's frustrating because the way some of these are implemented, I guess the question for me is, and I don't have the answer off the top of my head, you know, will it still be useful if I don't want to use Android TV anymore? And if it is, great. And if it's
right,
not.
So does it function as a soundbar alone? And you just don't plug in the HDMI cable or the video cable to use all the other stuff.
Yeah, and that's not to say anything against Android TV or the JBL device. Just I get nervous about some of the combiney stuff, to use a highly technical marketing term. You know, it's great as soon as you get into the sort of, you know, the within a certain window, it can be fantastic, much like that operating system on your new television. And when you get outside of that, things get kind of ew. Okay, so it's got a Chromecast built in. It's got 4K HDMI inputs.
It looks on paper, it looks like a very compelling device.
Yes, I would like to hear it.
Yeah, I would like to hear it too. It has that subwoofer built into it.
JBL does a lot of nice engineering, and some of their studio monitors are ridiculously good for the money. And you know, they're part of Harman Kardon. Harman Kardon got bought by Samsung. It's a really huge company, and most of actually what they do is designing for third parties. There's a lot of amazing stuff from JBL. They own Revell, which makes some of the best speakers anybody makes. Mm-hmm. Some of the JBL stuff blows me away. Some of the JBL stuff doesn't. I really would like to kind of hear it on a case-by-case basis. So.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear this. I hope that we can get one in studio to get some sort of a review on it.
Well, whomever that works at JBL that's watching, please send us a review unit. I mean, that's the next that's, natural
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, because obviously so. They're watching or listening. So
yeah, clearly.
Yeah, that should be pretty easy.
Yeah, well, speaking of things to stick into your TV, last week we also talked about the Android TV dongle that we saw from Google in an FCC filing or FCC review that was only for dev use. It was never for actually consumer products. And once again, we wish for something, and then the magic of the world delivers. Sling just released a product that basically is this. It is it's called the Air TV Mini HDMI dongle, and it comes with a Bluetooth remote. And it's a little dongle that goes into your TV via HDMI, and it's got buttons for Sling, Netflix, Google Assistant, and a home button that takes you to Android TV. And it comes with 2 gig of RAM, 8 gig of storage for DVR, and you can get this for just $80, and that includes a $25 Sling credit. So if you're looking for a HDMI dongle that's running an Android TV, your search is over.
That's kind of compelling.
That's
a tight little unit. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm gonna skip that. But I have a bizarre brand negative affinity. I don't like Sling.
Oh really?
Yeah.
What do you not like about Sling?
I just feel like it was a really great product, and now it's not, or it's a different offering. I'm just not. I know a lot of people are subscribed to Sling's TV service, and you know, and use it and like it. But for some reason, I'm like, oh, this is great. I just wish it didn't have Sling on it, or I didn't get a Sling credit. Like, just give me pure Android TV, no other bells and whistles.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. And sometimes looking at the remotes that have the big button with the service on it. For whatever reason, that's a turnoff for me. Even though if it has a Netflix button, like I use Netflix all the time, you'd think that I would be okay with that. But for whatever reason, I look at the remote and I see the big Netflix button or whatever.
It's tacky, right? I don't know. I don't like it.
It's co-marketing dollars, and it helped make that more affordable
that's
money.
That's how they got to $80 price point, right? Like it subsidized by Netflix.
I'm trying to remember what it was that showed up as a particularly large button on a remote we looked at several years ago. And I laughed because I was like, who is this? And a couple of years later, the service kind of like floated and apparently spent all of its venture capital on putting big buttons on remotes and then disappeared. And I remember like thinking about that and, you know, being like, well, that was just worthless, you know. And of course you couldn't remap the button.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, you had this button for like a service you never heard of right there on the remote.
And it's forever embedded on the remote.
Yeah, I don't think anybody used the remote for that particular piece of hardware for very long, but, all right, you know, the dream was magnificent for several minutes.
Right. That's so much potential. So much potential. And then finally, some leaks, because we're getting close to the Note 10, and we keep hearing about the Pixel 4. So first, the Note 10, the press images have leaked, courtesy of WinFuture, complete with, you know, everything that we're kind of expecting out of the Note 10, a centered camera hole in the front display, nearly bezel-less, and of course it has the S Pen propped up nicely along the side, and kind of, you know, it looks like another Note. I mean, no reason not to be excited about this if you are a Note fan. Although that's like cropping it in strange ways. But anyways, you aren't going to have to wait long to find out about the Note 10. But there you go. That's a good kind of front shot of the hole punch, which I don't mind the hole punch. I know some people hate it, but I think it looks all right. It's small enough. So we'll find out about that next month. The event is August 7th. Sam Mobile also says that the 5G version is going to come in 256, 512, and 1 terabyte storage options for all of that media that you're storing on your phone. I don't know. Man, terabyte.
I store media on my phone.
1 terabyte's worth?
1 terabyte's worth?
I have a 400 gigabyte SD card in this phone.
Okay.
One of the reasons I don't have a Google Pixel 3A is because it doesn't have a micro SD card slot, and I literally have over 200 gigabytes of media on this.
Okay. Now, do you enjoy the fact that you have it on a medium that is removable, because versus putting it onto the device itself?
Well, one, in the price category where I shop, they almost never have decent memory capacity.
Right. No, that's true. Fair enough.
It's 32 or 64 gigabytes. Like, you know, maybe someday I'll buy a flagship phone again. But, you know, the flagship phones I found most compelling have often had no micro SD card slots.
Yep.
And, you know, we'll see.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then I mentioned the Pixel 4. It's cropping up in places again. It's always hard to know whether this was meant to happen or whether it was a true accident. But there's another shot of a Pixel 4 out in the wild with a case on it that looks kind of like Google's Fabric-y case, sort of. It's done in a way that really hides the camera bump. You see the camera array, but the case, you know, doesn't show that the bump exists necessarily. So it's kind of a flush back sort of thing. Kind of looks a little funky. But
that's weird. Yeah. I don't know if I like that.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
It's weird. That doesn't feel
like
good,
the bump.
Jason.
We'll just make it really thick. Of course, we could have made the whole phone really thick and given you more battery life, but we're about thick.
Yeah, I know, right? They never do that. Why don't they ever do that?
We're going to give you different size circle holes in the back of your phone. it doesn't look balanced.
Yeah.
It looks like something, right? In the background of a scene in Star Wars.
Yes.
Like there should be Jawas running up to wrenches.
Oh, totally nailed it. That's awesome.
Man.
Who knows how long we have to wait to actually see the Pixel 4, but man, we know a lot about it. And part of that is because Google has acknowledged as much with their kind of confirmation of one of the leaks a month or so ago. So we will find out about that as like sands through the hourglass. These are the days of our lives.
Well, so do you think given that we've got this, you know, go back to the Google Pixel 4, given that we've got these leaks that they acknowledge that it exists, I mean, do you, Jason, expect an announcement in the fall, right? Like in September, October timeframe?
I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of wondering if they're going to bump it up a little bit than what they've normally been doing.
I see what you did there. They're going to bump it up a little bit, like the camera bump.
Oh, thank you. I'll take credit for that.
So you think they're gonna go sooner? Like it's July 16th.
My gut tells me that they might go a little sooner than they have been. Going sometime in October, nearish November, seems like a long way away from their confirmation of the official design of the back of the phone. You know what I mean? I don't know. Something tells me that they're going to announce it sooner, and maybe it would behoove them to do that just based on the timing of devices releasing before Christmas and all this kind of stuff. Maybe that gives them more time to like build up a little bit more energy behind it.
All right. So here's the deal, though. The Pixel 3 was announced on October 9th, 2018, right? And then the Pixel 3A gets announced on May 7th, 2019. You really think we're getting a Pixel 4 less than a year after the Pixel 3?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good point. But then Google
How
did...
are Pixel 3 sales?
Not great, Bob.
Not good.
I smell a Pixel 4.
Yeah, right. Well,
but how Pixel 3A sales been?
Well, I think
I don't know how those sales have been. Yeah, but that's been received really positively.
It has been received pretty positively, and yeah. I imagine they're probably doing pretty good for anyone who is considering getting a Pixel, because everybody kind of came out after the 3A and said, "Why would you even get the 3 when the 3A is, you know, gives you many of the great things about the 3?"
What anyways, for half the price? Lower? I don't care. The camera is just as good. I care.
Right.
If they just put a micro SD card slot in it. Yeah. Oh, wait. Did it have a headphone jack?
Yes, the 3A had a headphone jack.
It did.
Has a headphone jack. So they almost got
costs
there.
Costs half as much. Costs, yeah. What, 60% less? Gives you most of the goodness?
Yeah, I'm telling you, the 3A is a great phone. I stuck with it for much longer than I normally would after reviewing a phone, because there was no real reason for me to switch back. I was completely convinced that I was on the same phone. So, it's a good phone. So I'm just saying I don't know where I'm pulling it from, but I kind of just have a feeling that they might do it a little bit earlier. I have a lot of feelings on this show, and most of them don't pan out. So don't listen to me.
I just like to
throw stuff against the wall and see what happens. And then when it works out, then I feel really smart.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about some apps up next. Sorry, I didn't give you much preparation for that. You always get there, Victor.
Good job, Victor. Good job. Well, when Google's not busy, you know, releasing new phones, they're releasing new social networks.
Yeah.
Going back to earlier in the conversation, how everything at Google seems to have an expiration date and then come back sooner or later. Google just couldn't resist the temptation to release another social network. This time it's called Shoelace. It's a location-based social network. Currently, right now, it's only available in New York City. It is invite-only. And the concept is that it's a hyper-local service for meeting up with people for events. And this is actually spitting out as a product of Area 120 at Google, which is a kind of incubation kind of group. And those of you who might have long memories might remember Google did another app back in 2011 called Schemer that did this, that helped to kind of plan events and things like that, local-based things. And that was closed down in 2014. Here we are 5 years later, 2019, Shoelace. Given that it is NYC based, I signed up for the beta. I have not got an invite code yet. But when I do, if I do, I will take a look at it and see if someone like this woman in the photo is available to hang out. But maybe Sarah wants to go somewhere and do something.
maybe she's part of your crew.
She's looking for a few people to do yoga in Prospect Park. And actually, my wife would do yoga, so maybe that's how they make friends. So there you go. but I don't know. It's kind of interesting because, like, these introducing a social network, especially a local-based one, like, what is the expectation for this? Is this expected to grow and actually become a product that exists, or is this something that they're going to get data about how people interact locally and then roll this into Google Maps or some or local guides or something that already exists?
That's a good question. You know? Yeah.
The second one makes more sense, but, is this the guy that bought Dodgeball just to snuff it? You know, is going back to missing Dodgeball again?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've also literally just opened up killedbybycooggle.com.
Oh, yeah. That's a fun one. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm like, how many social networks has Google?
Orchid.
Yeah. Yeah, Orchid comes to mind, and I don't know. I find it frustrating. Like it seems like they keep wanting to do something like this, and it keeps being a wicked rip in pain that never quite works out the way they expect it to. And I just don't understand why they keep doing this. Wanting more user data actually kind of makes sense to me. You know, because I will say I love the sort of, you know, most active hours charts they have for a lot of stores and. Mm-hmm. Areas. So, you know, if it made that data more useful, but you know, the likelihood of me signing up for another social network at this point is probably undetectable without the use of scientific instruments. And if it's from Google, then it's even less likely than that at this point, because why would I invest the time to do something, you know, to go through all the onerous sort of like, I'm on part of a new social platform and you know,
just sounds exhausting, man.
Yeah. And knowing it's got a slim chance of survival, it's either going to get popular and then they'll kill it, like, oh, look, Hangouts on Air. Or it's going to, you know, just be a pain in the ass and never have any traction outside of Brazil.
Yeah. It's not going to get
so popular. doing a quick search on Killed by Google for the word social network, I can see that there have been 8 projects that Google has launched and then killed over the years. So this is the 9th social network now that they are rolling out.
Google Plus.
In their defense, they some of these were acquisitions. So it's not like they created it and then killed it. They just bought it and killed it.
Yeah, Google Plus, Orkut. What else here? Wildfire Interactive, which is a social marketing application. Google Currents was a social magazine.
What, Facebook isn't a social marketing application? It's a social advertising application. Sorry.
Slide, photo sharing software for social networking services. Google Friend Connect. Oh, that was a social networking site from 2008 to 2012.
Google Buzz.
Jaiku.
Remember Buzz? Oh, is Wave on here? Wave's got to be on here.
Yeah, I was going to say, where's Wave?
Yeah, Buzz. Yeah, oh, Google my goodness, Wave, Buzz. Yeah.
Well, Wave is listed as an online communication and collaborative real-time editor tool. So there you go. Google Buzz.
Dodgeball.
Man, I love that the first product killed was Google Desk Bar. Do you remember the Desk Bar? That was awesome.
No.
Anyway. It was a toolbar that went into your browser. That was Google Desk Bar was a small inset window on the Windows toolbar and allowed users to perform searches without leaving the desktop. I remember when I saw that. This is amazing. Yeah.
The toolbar craze of the early 2000s.
Yeah, I remember. Wow. Well.
Everybody was fighting to be a part of your toolbar at that point.
Killed about 13 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, rest in peace.
Is that the oldest thing on the?
No.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Wow. So you started suffering at the hands of Google much before most of the rest of
right,
us.
You've got a lot of practice. No,
it's been a long love affair, Patrick, let me tell you.
Love-hate relationship.
The number of these products that literally, like, I loved, like Grand Central. Yeah. I mean, admittedly, that became voice, but Grand Central was so cool, you know, and some of the stuff is so good.
Yeah. It's a great site. Yeah. Well, hopefully Google doesn't decide to kill Google Translate, which it's, you know, hey, anything's possible at this point.
I feel like they're getting so much good information out of that. That will run until they don't need the AI to run it, but then that makes no sense. Then they'll start charging. Like I feel like they're getting too much really, really interesting, useful information at a very, very deep level to want to touch that.
Yeah. I mean, this is a crazy app when you think about what it's capable of doing. It's just one of those examples of like, this feels like the future. Google Translate is getting a new update. In this case, it can now auto detect the appropriate language using the camera. So if you come upon a sign, it's in a language you don't know and you can't recognize, so you can't automatically go to your app and say, this is in this language or whatever. You can point the camera at it. It will detect what the language is and then automatically translate that into your own language. You know, once again, really, really handy and useful if you happen to be traveling.
Great if you're on an episode of Lost. Great if you pick up the wrong driver's license study guide in the state of California, because I think it's in 17 languages now. It's like, oh
finally.
Korean, and I have to study for the test.
Finally, I can learn how to drive. Apparently, 88 languages now supported.
That's insane.
Yeah, I know. It's just such a great app. I have very few opportunities to use it, but I love that it exists, and I love the way that it does this automatic translation where you point it at a sign,
yeah,
and it's like it matches the font and everything looks good, but it just changes the words, and it's just magical. And it's also getting more accurate, of course. I bet every release they probably say that. And it's even more accurate than before, which would be true. All right, Ron, you got the last one.
Yes, sir. So this is one that's near and dear, close to my heart. A few months ago, Amazon announced that it was going to play nice with Google Chromecast and that their Amazon Prime Video app was going to support Chromecast. And I've been waiting patiently and then finally got the app update. And now you can watch Amazon Prime Video on your Chromecast device on a television. You don't need an Amazon Fire Stick or a Blu-ray player like I've been using with the Amazon app in there. I can now use the Prime Video app on my Android phone and Chromecast it out.
Nice.
Yay for big companies playing nice together.
Long national nightmare is over.
Finally.
Took a while.
So, I wanted to highlight that because I feel like that was it's a major moment in television watching, I feel.
Yeah. It was a years long of I don't know, spat. I don't know what it was, but it was like, I don't like you, Google. I don't like you, Amazon. It was like they were kind of slapping each other's hands, and finally they're like, actually, wait a minute. Maybe it benefits us to actually do this. Okay, let's make true.
Oh, you mean our users want something? Yeah. Oh, okay, let's do that.
Oh, yeah. let's give it to them. All right.
I just want Audible to finally show up on the Lenovo smart clock.
<It's> very specific.
Don't we all?
No, there's lots of people that want that.
Finally, we have an email from Ben Burris who says, do you know of a way to set up preferred Wi-Fi networks on my Pixel? I have a hotspot that I only want my phone to connect to if other networks are not available. The hotspot is almost always on and with me. So when I arrive at home or somewhere with Wi-Fi, I want the phone to auto switch and to know kind of like the order. First off, I think the app that you're looking for is called Wi-Fi Analyzer. Let me see. I have Wi-Fi Analyzer, Wi-Fi Prioritizer. Let's see here. I think I typed it in wrong. It's Wi-Fi Prioritizer. There we go. That's it. Sorry about that. Look for Wi-Fi Prioritizer in the Play Store. It has not been updated since October 2016, so it's a little out of date. No, a lot out of date at this point. So, you know, your mileage may vary, let's say. But so an interesting note on this. So when Pi came out, it introduced a Wi-Fi scan throttling feature, if you want to call it that, that ultimately diminished, from what I understand, the usefulness of this app. Android Q still throttles Wi-Fi scanning, and before now actually required an ADB command in order to deactivate that. But talk about synergy, Android Q Beta 5 that just came out introduced a new developer option. So if you've opened up the developer options on your phone, you can find and deactivate Wi-Fi scan throttling without the required ADB command. So you can go in there, deactivate that. I haven't tested it on Wi-Fi Prioritizer myself to know whether that kind of opens it up and solves the problem that people were experiencing. But it looks pretty positive given that feature is there. So if you don't have this yet, obviously this is just in the beta. Maybe you aren't on the beta channel. You know, Q's right around the corner. And if you have the Pixel, you're going to get the update. So you've got that to look forward to. And I wish I had an answer for you for now, but that's what I have. That's all I have, because the outlook, you know, with Pi and it being all messed up probably kind of shoots that down until you get the update. So look for that. So Ben, thank you for writing in. AAA@twit.tv if anyone wants to write in with your questions. Hopefully we can help you out. And without further delay, it's time to enter the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
All right, so I had to pull some results from a different time because people don't like fun.
Shenanigans.
So I had to pull the results from a little bit earlier than right before the show, and it turns out that when I did that, Launchboard won with 29.8% of the vote. And Launchboard, who was that? That was Flo. Inlight Pixaloop was second with 28% of the vote. That was Team Guest. Third place, it appears to be Dr. Mario World at 21%. And fourth place, Easy D&D, that's yours, Ron, at 20%.
The margins on this are so tight.
Oh, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
So that's what we have. Hopefully that was enough time for Wade County. Did he have any of the results, or do we even know?
I don't know if Wade County is here tonight, so we might not have the results of the competition. Right. Although it is say, oh, there's Wade County just coming in at the last minute.
So he was waiting for us to read them.
Just waiting for it. Through 27 weeks of arena fun, Flo is in first place with 86 points. The guests have 77 points, which is now represented by Patrick tonight. I'm in third with 56 points. And Jason, you are in last with 54 points.
Yeah, so he made a correction. 53, so I'm one less.
53. Yeah,
why did I say that correction out loud? I should have just gone with 54.
So that means that based on those results, I should go first, Patrick goes second, and you go third, Jason.
All right. So I'm reordering that. Oops. Okay, there we go. All right, Ron, I've got yours installed. Tell me about it.
Cool. Yeah, so if you are like one of the many, many millions of people who use WhatsApp, this app will be of interest to you. Or if you use any other app, messaging app that allows people to send you voice messages, if you're like me, often you're at work, you're in meetings, you can't really listen to that voice message, this app called VoicePop will transcribe that message to text for you in a seamless fashion, which is pretty magical. They've positioned the app mainly around WhatsApp because they're smart, because literally millions of people use it, but it will work with other apps that use audio in it. And here, Jason's got it in front of him here. Once you install it, basically all you need to do is install the app and then go into WhatsApp. And earlier I sent Jason a voice message. Long tap on the voice message, Jason, to bring up the menu up top, and then choose share, the share button, and then voice pop should be right there. And what it'll do is it'll play the audio internally, and then it will transcribe the text of the message. Live demo. Let's see if it happens.
Yeah, it happened earlier. It's doing a lot of swirling right now, though.
I spoke very clearly, too.
You did. I'm a little worried. It worked earlier.
What's going on here?
We're
going
to try that again. Yeah. There we go.
There we go.
Hey, Jason, it's Ron from All About Android, your co-host. Thanks for showing my app in the arena. I sure hope it wins. Vote for me.
So now if you want to test the accuracy, you can press play on that audio and we can compare it to the text.
Okay.
And we could hear it.
Where is the – up here?
Yeah.
Hey, Jason. It's Ron from All About Android, your co-host. Thanks for showing my app in the arena. I sure hope it wins. Vote for me.
Wow. You spoke really deliberately.
I did. I was having really that same thought. Like,
I've known you for a long time, and I don't think I've ever heard you speak that way.
Nothing like speaking slowly. But what's cool is that, Jason, you actually, if we go back to the app view, you can see that there's a you can go into the app and you can see all the messages that were transcribed, and you can also listen to them from the app, which is pretty cool as well. So again, if you're I have visual voicemail for my voicemail, which is great and transcribes my voicemail, but honestly I get more people sending me voice messages via WhatsApp than voicemails these days, and so this transcription tool is just super neat. Having it slide into the share menu is super convenient, and it allows you to stay within the app and you're able to get messages transcribed, which is pretty cool. So there you go. Free in the Google Play Store. Voice pop, transcribe voice to text for free.
And I can play your audio at twice the speed.
Yeah.
From All About Android, your co-host. Thanks for
That probably sounds more.
Yeah, that sounds a little, that sounds a little bit more natural. That's awesome. It's called Voice Pop, and it is free. And you can tell your friends about Voice Pop too by clicking that button. But I won't do that. We've already told our friends here on the show. All right, Patrick, I have your app installed. I think, anyways, let me see here. Do I? I have your other app installed. Windy. So give it a setup, and I'm going to get it installed. I had a different one. All right, tell me about it.
No, it's okay. I'm a weather nerd, and I also do a lot of things that involve wanting to be aware of the weather, whether it's sailing or surfing or snowboarding and stuff like that. Like Dark Sky is one of my favorite apps. If you've never, run that, it's a fantastic hyper-local weather service. It averages all these different weather predictions and gives you what it thinks is the most accurate version of the weather for you. So the one I'm talking about today, though, is Windy, W-I-N-D-Y. It's based on a website. And it is a incredibly beautiful visualizer that lets you actually, like right now, what you're looking at, that's probably the actual wind offshore in the Pacific Coast. And if you expand it with your fingers down on, Petaluma or San Francisco, you'll see more and more local information on there. And go ahead and there you go. That's a big chunk of Central California, Fresno, and that's a good one, Santa Rosa. Come on, Petaluma. There's Petaluma. And you can actually see like the wind speed and direction. So if you go to the in the lower right-hand corner, there's those three bars down there. And if you click on that, they'll give you a whole bunch of additional options. Scroll down to where you see where it says air quality. Click on PM 2.5 and then go back to the main map. And what that's going to do is do an overlay on there that should give you the information for the particulates basically the amount of particulate matter in the air. And if you'll see it, like right now, there's some issues like down around Baja in Mexico. But this map, if you looked at this when the fires were burning uncontrollably in Northern California, that sort of red spot, gotten into a section I've never seen before.
Surprise!
How exciting!
Yes.
Try hitting the home button real quick.
All right. Oh, I see.
If you look down there, if you expand into that red zone, that'll actually show you as you look across the sort of guide in the bottom. Like, I don't know what's going on down there. There's probably a fire down there, but there's a huge amount of particulate matter in the air there. And last summer when Northern California was burning, a huge chunk of Northern and Central California was that deep, terrible color of red. Yeah. And that means it's time to not leave the house or not leave the house without a pretty good mask. But this is a really beautiful application. There's some other additional stuff in there. If you go down to that triple bar in the corner below the home button. Radar, lightning, I particularly like waves. If you're a surfer, this is a fun one. So it gives you the direction and intensity of the waves. That's probably, I think at that point you're looking at the Gulf of Mexico, but if you scroll over to the Pacific, they should look a little bigger and more organized. That was the Atlantic. Oh, it's the summer. so it gives you access to a ton of information. And if you're into any of a number of sports, it can be a really, really cool tool. And also it's just kind of mesmerizing to look at wind and wave and patterns and stuff. I just think it's a really, really beautiful application. So.
Nice.
Oh, look, you've got the clouds.
I'm in the clouds.
It's one of those things you can just play around with for a really long time.
Yeah. I love the visualization of the kind of the wind pathways and everything. That's awesome.
Real quick, cool. Before you stop, go back to that triple bar and hit radar and lightning. You'll probably really like this one.
Do it. Oh.
Oh.
What's going on in Idaho Falls? What's going on in Pocatello?
There's a storm.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So on mine, I'm actually getting little flares of light.
Yeah, there we go.
And haptic feedback from the phone for every time the lightning strikes. So.
Oh, wow.
That's really cool. Love it. I love the visualization in this. It's awesome.
It's pretty. It's nerdy. It's weather. It makes me happy. Windy.com is the website, and Windy is the app. And that is available in the Google Play Store.
Nice.
Right, it's on. Free.
Good pick. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, love it. All right. So speaking of visualizations, this is kind of a funky little app that I just kind of lost myself for 10 minutes using a few weeks ago. And so I want to bring it in because it reminded me, have you ever seen those like the, I don't know what they're called, but it's like a glass display with like sand and water on the inside.
Yes.
And when you flip it over, the sand kind of drips and kind of has a little bit of that effect. I'm going to see if I can reset it here. My app is called Fluid Simulation. There's a free version and then there's a paid version for $269 that opens up a bunch of other options. And it's meant to be kind of like a live wallpaper construction kit with some really interesting kind of fluid dynamics. Let's see here.
Is that a Huawei tablet?
Yeah, it is a Huawei tablet. That's right. Good. I mean, pretty. Yeah, it's right up there. It says Huawei. Let's see here. I was trying to reset it and I can't figure that out, but whatever. So basically you can see I've got a lot of different options over here. And as I touch on the display, I kind of get the effects of how it's all set up. You kind of get these like fire effects, really hot around the finger, and you can play with all of the dynamics here to really kind of, you know, change the intensity around that, you know, a threshold. I mean, a lot of this I'm just kind of like clicking around to kind of see what it does, but that's kind of the beauty of it. The fun of it is that you pull out the little sidebar and you just kind of start messing around and see what you come up with. And it's just really kind of satisfying. I don't know. There's something about it. It almost makes you feel like you're shooting finger or fire out of your fingertips. But you've got all these different settings that you can kind of go through and
make it pixelated. Make it pixelated.
Oh.
What's the fringe?
Ooh, that's neat. I like pixelated. That's really cool. Maybe fringe. This is an app that isn't demonstrated at all on audio, by the way. We're just going to be going ooh and ah. Anyways, it's just kind of a lot of fun. There's not a whole lot to talk about with this app other than kind of showing the cool kind of visual effects that you can get out of it. We'll turn off colorful and see what happens. That looks pretty colorful to me. I don't know why that's not colorful. Vorticity? I don't know, but there it is apparently. increase the frame rate. I bet the higher we get, maybe it slows down. Ooh, that looks nice. I like that. So yeah, anyways, you kind of get the gist of it. You pretty much
just
pull this up.
That's why you need the new processor.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You can pull this up, play around with it for a little bit, figure out, you know, dial it into the place that you like, and then you can set it as your wallpaper and it turns into a live wallpaper on your desktop. So we'll go ahead and apply that, close, we'll go home, and there we are. We've got it in the background, and it's interactive in the background as well. So once it's back there, you can kind of play around with it too and get those swirly effects on your background. So it's kind of simple, but there's a lot of, you know, tweakability to it. So if you just want to kind of kill 10 minutes and create something splashy and interesting, check out Fluid Simulation. Again, there is a free version, but you get more features, of course, when you pay $269 to upgrade it to the pro version. And you can kind of create your own style of live wallpaper on your device. So it's now time for you to vote. twit.to/AAApoll429 is where you'll go. twit.to/AAApoll429. Place your vote for your favorite app. Is it VoicePop, Windy, or Fluid Simulation? When you place your vote this time, you're not going to see your results. And I'm sorry about that, Victor. But you won't see your results. We're going to have to surprise you with the results next week. And we'll see how that
goes.
We're
going to see if we can thwart shenanigans. Oh, yes. And Victor votes for Fluid.
This is what you see now. So there you go. Victor voted for my simulation app. Thank you very much, Victor. I appreciate that. I'll give you my dollar bill at the end of the show. The $1 bill that I have in my wallet. Patrick, yep. So great to get you on. I think the last time you were on, I was off the show. I think it was you and Ron.
Yes.
And so I'm stoked to get the opportunity to bring you on when I can actually be on with you. Thank you for sacrificing your evening for us.
Appreciate no. Actually, at this point, you know, I'm sitting here getting all happy. with Fluid Simulator. So,
nice, nice.
You know, I've done longer things for less rewards, so I'm good. And it's, you know, it's been fun. Any reason I should delay updating the Pi? Should I just, as soon as I'm done with this, is it Pi time?
I'd say if you're getting the update for Pi, heck yeah. I don't know of any reason not to update to Pi. You want to be on the latest, you know, at least the latest official release of Android.
It's stable.
Sure.
Yeah.
Totally. So you've got the notification waiting for you, and all you have to do is click it and download and go?
Literally right about the time this morning while I was looking at the rundown, my phone's like, blah! And I'm like, I'm trying to read the, I got a Pi update.
Oh. Man,
it has security updates through May. Woo!
How did you end up going the rest of the day and not updating it?
I have
because when I see that, I'm like,
issues.
Got to do it
about my phone eating its own tail.
Fair enough.
And I wait till the entire family is gathered in one place, and then and only then, when I know everyone is safe and secure, and you know. I'm a 2-block run from the police station. Then I update my phone.
Got it. All right. Fair enough. I understand. Yes, I say update. Wade County in chat says it'll be your last update on that phone, Patrick. I don't know that for sure. Wade County seems to think so. So
I'm sure he's right.
Keep that in mind. Patrick, you're doing so many things right now. Where do you want to point people to the work that you're doing online?
You know, if you haven't checked out Sebastian Peek's new co-host over This Week in Computer Hardware, we call it Twitch. You can find it at twit.tv / Twitch. And I've got new episodes of AV Excel starting up next week. That's AVE. I should know how to spell this. AVEXCEL, which is a home theater and audio podcast you do with Robert Heron. We'll be talking about some new headphones and what's going on with some of the monitors. We pretty much have all the 2019 monitors. And I also get to give a shout out as I disappear. If you're looking for a set of earbuds, the microphone's not too great, but Cambridge Audio did a really, really nice job with their first wireless earbud. They're like a 50-year-old British audio company, but these sound amazing for $129.
Nice.
And have a 9-hour battery life and another 36 in the charging case. So,
oh, man, I love that.
Yeah.
It's so nice when you don't have, you know, when you're wireless. Like, I'm fully converted at this point. I resisted for years, and now it's really hard for me to go to wired just because of the convenience of the charging case, you know, you're going to dock them in there anyways, so then they're always charged up, and it's just such a great experience.
I have some high-end headphones that it'll be a long ass time before there's wireless quality that's that good, but
for sure
I'm starting to anticipate being excited about those in the future.
The convenience factor is good.
I was just going to say the price you pay and quality you get for convenience, you know, it's that triangle, right?
Absolutely. Well, Patrick, thank you so much. Always great getting you on, and we'll have to have you back soon, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ron, what's new with you?
Well, considering earlier in the show, Patrick didn't know about my little family expansion, I'm going to brag for a moment and remind everybody and update Patrick on a project I told him about a couple of years ago that finally launched publicly. Our little pinball device website is at scorebit.io. It's where myself, Jay Adelson, and Brian O'Neill, who also worked at Dig back in the day, we're building the future of pinball, building devices that are going to go inside old pinball machines and send data to the cloud and have an app where you can keep track of your scores and everything. So super excited. We're going to actually have some more announcements coming up in the next couple of weeks as we kind of move forward. But the hardware development is hard, and it is continuing in a positive direction. So happy to report that.
Oh, man, I'm so proud of you guys. I love watching the progress of this.
So awesome.
Did you, Jason, I think you were out when the Fast Company article came out. I think you were out.
I'll have to look that up.
I'll give you the link now. Yeah. So Fast Company caught wind of what we were doing. And here, I just replaced it in the doc, Victor, so you can do that. And they did a profile on us and the fine folks at Stern Pinball and what they're doing. And but mainly it's focused on what we're doing. Admittedly, with more of a focus on Jay, but I think he's more of a known factor to the Fast Company world than I am.
Yep.
But it was great to see. It's basically a a straight up profile of what we've been doing and what the product is going to be. And there's actually, if you scroll down, there's a picture of the device. One more photo down, Victor, if you scroll down, you can see. There is our hardware device that we've designed and are going to be manufacturing soon. So
right on. Yeah. That is so exciting. Nice. I can't wait to read this article. I'll read it after the show.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Congratulations once again.
Thanks.
Yes, and I can't wait to hear the news. You can find me all across the Twit network next week, especially Leo is out. So I'm filling in for him on three different shows. So you'll see a lot of me next week. So I got to rest up for that. And I do my resting camping, which is where I'll be for the rest of the week. But I'm looking forward to that. Victor, thank you so much for everything that you do for the show. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
And thanks to Dave and Liz from Kansas who are sitting here in the audience, making me feel all special and stuff. Thanks for stopping by and spending your evening here watching us make fools of ourselves, or at least myself. But that is it for this week. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us email at AAA@twit.tv. You can find us on Twitter at Android Show. We have our Arena apps list. Every app that we've ever featured in the Arena can be found in a full spreadsheet, twit.to/Android apps. Show notes and past episodes found at twit.tv/AAA. That's where you're going to find all the information that you need to know about our show, subscribe links, everything that you need to know, including the time. We record every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. Flo, we missed you this week, and we can't wait to see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody. See you later.